with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Marnie Roper. We are pleased to have a disability update today from a regular guest, the Honourable Gareth Ward, MP, New South Wales Minister for Families, Communities and Disability Services, and member for Kiama. Barbara Sullivan spoke to the Minister about a wide range of subjects, including the continuing funding for advocacy, possible changes to the NDIS, forthcoming legislation, and the extra challenges of COVID for people living with a disability.
Welcome back, Minister.
Barbara, it's wonderful to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Now, there's much happening at the moment in general in the disability sector. First of all, I just want to talk to you about the funding back in November 2020.
Through the budget, yes, indeed. And look, that was the result of not just bashing on the Treasurer's door, but knocking it in. And we certainly did that. In fact, we secured $112 million for advocacy, which puts now aside the debate around, are we going to fund advocacy, are we not? Look, you can imagine being the first Minister for Disabilities to have lived experience of disability. There was no way that I was going to leave some of our most vulnerable people, people that are not in the NDIS, but are needing mainstream supports through advocacy. I was never going to leave them without those supports. So I worked really hard to secure those funds over the next 3 years, and I'm really, really proud that we've been able to support our advocates to continue to do their good work. We'll be looking at a tender process for those funds. As you'd be aware,
right,
our Age and Disability Commissioner, Robert Fitzgerald, published a report on the advocacy sector, and we're looking at how we align that tendering process with those funds. But the other funding we secured, Barbara, was $17 million for disability workforce and capacity building and training. We know that if you want services, you've got to have people that can deliver them. They can't just be any services. They need to be quality, consistent and reliable.
Mm.
So this money is about getting more people into the workforce. It's an expanding sector. There's money in the NDIS. We want to see quality services, but we need the people to run them.
When we last spoke, the review of the Disability Inclusion Act was underway, and I understand the report was issued late in 2020. What did the review find?
Well, look, it found that the Disability Inclusion Action Plans worked well, but they needed some improvements. Firstly, they needed to be accessible, and not every single one of them across local government were as inclusive or as accessible as they could be. But we also wanted to make sure that we were holding councils and agencies to account with the things that they say in those Disability Inclusion Action Plans. There needed to be a bit of a dashboard and reporting mechanism so that we could actually know they're being met. So that was some of the things that came through as part of the report, and I'm looking forward to putting the legislation up to the Parliament probably in June this year. It's a very different time from when this Act came into force. Think about 2014.
Yes.
Pre-NDIS. But the Act reflects the post-NDIS world and how government agencies in New South Wales respect and care for people with disabilities, how we build a more inclusive state, but also how we make some of those levers that we started and developed in 2014 work more effectively in 2021.
You've embarked on new legislation regarding restrictive practices based on human rights and risk to health and well-being. Can you give us more detail on that?
Sure can. Look, we're actually leading the nation on this as well. For those listeners that are not familiar with what restrictive practices are, they are things that you put in place to stop people hurting themselves and their carers. It may be anything from a seatbelt cover to stop people from removing the seatbelt whilst a vehicle is in motion through to restraining people. What concerns me is that there are a huge number of unauthorised restrictive practices, and there's a reporting process in place for that. But what I want to see us do is use psychologists and occupational therapists to develop ways to eliminate restrictive practices. One of the beautiful examples, there was a young lady that tragically pulled violently on her own hair between the hours of 2 and 3 every day, and she was being restrained. But we got a psychologist in and examined her behaviour, and what we actually did was put brushes into her hair. And so now she combs her hair between those hours.
Ah.
Things like that are just a different way at looking at an age-old problem for people with severe intellectual disabilities, but they're a much more dignified, humanised and sensible way to approach this old problem. And I think that with the skills and expertise we have in this sector, we can work towards eliminating restrictive practices where possible. Every journey starts with the first step, but this ledge that we'll be introducing into the Parliament, probably about the same time actually, is nation-leading legislation and reform.
Now, here we are in April. The last time I spoke to you was the end of May. The whole COVID thing was actually quite new at that point, and you had announced special initiatives for people with disabilities in dealing with the whole COVID restrictions. I'm interested now that restrictions have eased and vaccinations have been rolling out, how successful those initiatives have been.
Look, I am very happy with the way in which we protected people with disabilities during this time. I mean, we had a very focused all of government response to everything, and that was everything to helping disability service providers get access to PPE through to the way in which we kept disability services updated on COVID and how they should engage and respond and support and service NDIS clients or anyone else with a disability. And, you know, I think that often in my portfolio, Barbara, you know, there are problems because you read about them in the paper, but because there wasn't the blow-ups, I think that's probably indication that things worked well. And we had a very unified and focused group of people from the ministerial level right through working to make sure we're putting those protections in place, getting those supports, working well with the Commonwealth in order to just put people first.
Now, you had meetings with the COAG Disability Reform Council. Are those continuing?
So there was a review of the COAG process, you'd recall, the permission that, and one of the standing meetings that was to continue was the Disability Minister's meeting, and that is continuing, and as it would always have to, frankly, because as part of the full scheme agreement for the NDIS, this is just not the Commonwealth's program. It is co-funded and co-designed by the states and territories. You know, I was always confident that those ministers' meetings were going to continue because we're half of the money, so they weren't going to cut us out. Although there are some reforms in this space that I'm concerned about, and I've raised those concerns with the Commonwealth with respect to independent assessments and how they're rolled out. I've also raised concerns around a number of other issues like the reserve fund in the past. Those things need to be resolved through discussion and through strategic planning and through a strong focus through ministers driving that work. And we're going to continue to do that. In fact, we've got a meeting later this month with the new minister, Linda Reynolds. Given her background and experience with disability, I think she's going to be an excellent minister, and I'm looking forward to working with her and very much having a bit of a fresh approach. I think the minister's appointment gives us the opportunity for a fresh set of eyes on some of these issues that the sector are concerned about.
So you mentioned before about independent assessments. What's your feeling about that? And I understand there's now been a second pilot done. Where are we with independent assessments?
Well, look, we're going to get an update at the Disability Minister's meeting. I wrote to the former minister early last month and just said to him that any changes to the scheme need to be done in consultation with the states and territories, and they need to align with what David Tune said. And the independent assessments were all about making sure that people had the right support. So what I don't want to see is, as a result of a one-hour meeting that mightn't involve the care of the person, services being to people, when how can you fully understand a person's need in a one-hour meeting? It's very concerning, and I've said to the Commonwealth, I'll be watching very closely. And my state and territory colleagues are also watching closely, and I have a very, very good relationship with all of my state and territory colleagues. We actually work very closely together. And in fact, it might interest you to know, Barbara, I convened the first state and territory-only ministers' meeting to the disability ministers' meeting with the Commonwealth so that we can talk about our issues, so that when we go into that meeting, we are absolutely united. This group, mind you, comprises Liberal ministers, Labor ministers, and even a Green from the ACT. We all get on famously, by the way, because we're all passionate about making sure the scheme works. And sometimes the Commonwealth will have its own interests. Our only interest is reflecting the views and concerns of people with disabilities, their carers, and the organisations that support them. And we want this scheme to work. So directly to answer your question about independent assessments, we've raised some concerns. We don't want it to be a cost-cutting exercise. It's got to be about managing the right supports that people need.
Homelessness is part of your portfolio, and I know that is something you've been particularly interested in. You extended temporary accommodation to 1 month during COVID. Will that continue?
We've returned to the way in which things used to operate, but there is the capacity to extend temporary accommodation, but temporary accommodation is temporary. My focus is on getting people into permanent accommodation. And one of the things that's come out of COVID is my alacrity support as the homelessness minister for the housing first approach. And what that means is what it says. You house people, but then you wrap the services around people to break the cycle. Because if you're on the streets, homelessness is a symptom of domestic violence, of drug and alcohol addiction, of financial hardship or mental illness. And a lot of these people are people that have never been assessed for the NDIS. And what we've been doing is working with homelessness services to try and get those assessments to then support people into not just accommodation, but then also inserting the services. They may be state government services, or they may be services, once we've had someone assessed for the NDIS, getting the supports that they should have been getting to break that homelessness cycle. So I can give you these numbers. In fact, I haven't actually talked about these publicly. In April last year and April this year, we housed 1,000 former rough sleepers in permanent accommodation. That is the equivalent of more than 3 years' worth of work in 1 year. The assertive outreach patrols, which I've scaled up from just one when I became the minister to more than 58 across the state. And that's where we go onto the street, we find people, we support them into temporary accommodation, and then we get them permanent accommodation and wrap those supports around people. So often people, Barbara, that are on the streets are people with a disability, and they are underrepresented in the NDIS. Right now there's only 9% of participants in the NDIS with psychosocial needs. It was estimated to be at 16%. And this work with our homelessness population is just so vital. Can I tell you, it is probably the most important thing I have done in my now 10 years in Parliament. Across the state, we've done two homelessness street counts, where the first we've seen a fall in street sleeping in the state's history, a 14% reduction in New South Wales and a 19% reduction in the City of Sydney.
I have to congratulate you on that. That's phenomenal.
Well, there's more to do, and you may not be aware of this, but one of Gladys's 14 Premier's priorities is to halve street sleeping by 2025. We've actually signed up to the Vanguard Agreement, which generally cities sign up to, London or New York, to halve street sleeping and then see it eradicated by 2030. Gladys decided to sign the whole state up, then said, "Here you go, Gareth, you're the Minister for Homelessness, go and make it happen."
Now, there's one thing I did want to ask you about. There was an announcement that the NDIS is not funding some of the participants with acquired brain injury and alcohol fetal syndrome.
That decision hasn't been made yet. What the minister's indicated is that he wants to introduce, or this is a former minister,
a former minister, right,
a range of changes to what's known as the primary rules, categories A, B, C, and D. And we said then, and this was part of my letter that I sent back on the 10th of March, where we just said, look, if you're going to make changes to the scheme, this is a co-funded, co-designed scheme, anything you do needs to be done in consultation and through consensus. So I said directly to Minister Robert, when he was the minister, we'd appreciate an exposure draft of the bill so that the community and participants and all of those people that are affected can actually look at the proposed changes and provide feedback. Don't do it to us. Actually share your views so that we can provide feedback. That was where things were at. But it will be interesting to see what Minister Reynolds' priorities are, and we'll see whether or not she chooses to amend or change or alter the way that she wants to operate and change the scheme that she believes in.
Thank you very much, Minister Ward.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening, and goodbye till next programme.